Ready? Okay, I'll go ahead and call us to order, regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on September 2nd, if the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next is the consideration of proclamation for September being National Recovery Month. Improve the lives of those affected by mental and or substance use disorders by raising awareness of these diseases and educating communities about the prevention, treatment, and recovery resources that are available. Anybody going to talk about this? Come on down.
Of course I will, Paul. Sarah, you can come on up.
Go ahead and introduce yourself when you sit down, if you would.
Hi, I'm Jason Hagland with Youth and Shelter Services. I'm the Director of Treatment, and I'm joined here with Community and Family Resources, Sally Carnes, who's representing them. And we just want to thank you guys for your ongoing support of recovery in our community. Mental health recovery and addiction recovery has been something that both of our agencies strive to do every year. September rolls around, and we're right here in this chair asking you for a proclamation for that month. And, you know, it's something that we all see as helpful in our communities, and this is just a great opportunity to recognize everyone that recovery is possible, recovery is healthy, recovery is good, and addiction and mental health issues are disease, just like diabetes and heart disease. So, again, on behalf of Community and Family Resources and Youth and Shelter Services, we want to thank the boards and the county's ongoing support of addiction treatment services as well as mental health services. Two things I do want to invite you to this Thursday. We are dunking to recovery at the Family Life Center in Ames, right north of Panera. We're going to have a dunk tank. We're going to have Dunkin' Donuts, and we're going to have a slam dunk contest. Cy will be there, as well as we've been lucky enough to have one of the sky sculptures put right in our front yard there overlooking Panera Bread. So if you haven't been by to have your picture taken with it's not Cy of the Dead, Cy of the, what's he named? I don't even, what's that? What Jade said. stop by and have your picture taken, but also have your picture taken with Cy. So I'm going to leave a couple of flyers for you guys. And Sally, did you have anything you wanted to add? Or?
I'll just echo what Jason said. You know, we all know somebody in our lives who's been touched by addiction or mental illness. And so, again, we thank you very much for recognizing September as National Recovery Month. I'll also invite you as well. We're also hosting a Recovery Month event on September 20th. It's a run or walk, or ride or bike, whatever you'd like to do. And so this is just to bring the community together to celebrate people who are in recovery from addictions or mental illness.
Okay.
Thursday from officially 3 to 6. We'll be there. And if you would like to be in the dunk tank, Rick,
or
Wade or Paul, any one of you, just wear your board shorts that day, and we will be happy to facilitate that. I think that would be a great picture in the paper.
Paul's got some serious ups, too, so I think you could win the dunk contest.
Yeah, I'm sure. All I have is Speedo, so you're all out of luck.
That's too much information.
Yes.
All right. Hey, I'd like to move approval of proclamation for September being National Recovery Month.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there anything further, or is there any desire that I read the
strike the record? No, I'd like to strike the record of your last comment.
Do you want me to read the proclamation?
Yeah, why don't you?
Yes, I think it would be a good idea, please.
This is entitled Story County Board of Supervisors National Recovery Month. Mental and substance use disorders affect all communities nationwide, but with commitment and support, people with these disorders can achieve healthy lifestyles and lead rewarding lives in recovery. By seeking help, people who experience mental and or substance use disorders can embark on a new path towards improved health and overall wellness. The focus of National Recovery Month this September is to celebrate their journey. Recovery Month spreads the message that behavioral health is essential to health and one's overall wellness, and that prevention works, treatment is effective, and people recover. The impact of mental and substance use disorders is apparent in our local community, and an estimated 54,000 people in Iowa are affected by these conditions. Approximately 23,000, 9.5% adolescents in Iowa, use an illicit drug in the past month. 16,000, or 6.4%, use marijuana, and 11,000, were 4.6% using illicit drug other than marijuana. 45,000 or 18.4% of adolescents in Iowa used alcohol in the past month, and 29,000, 12.2%, engaged in binge drinking. Through Recovery Month, people become more aware and able to recognize the signs of mental and or substance use disorders, which can lead more people into needed treatment. Managing the effects of these conditions can help people achieve healthy lifestyles, both physically and emotionally. On its 25th anniversary, the Recovery Month observance continues to work to improve the lives of those affected by mental and or substance use disorders by raising awareness of these diseases and educating communities about the prevention, treatment, and recovery resources that are available. For the above reasons, I am asking the citizens of Story County to join youth and shelter services, community and family resources, and other dedicated community partners in celebrating this September as National Recovery Month. I do hereby proclaim the month of September 2014 as National Recovery Month. So we've got a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. So it be.
Thank you so much for your
work.
Thank
you. You bet.
Let's do.
I want the record to show that Story County is in support of United Way, and so you'll see a lot of our staff wearing jeans.
Okay, I was going to say.
They have to contribute a dollar a day for every time they wear jeans. I went out and bought some jeans.
Good for you, Wayne.
And that.
I thought you thought it was a 4-day holiday.
Oh, no.
I'm
in support.
Thank you. Okay, the next is our public comment section number one. This comment period.
Oh, no, no.
One more.
It's advanced Iowa program.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, there we go. Presentation of Advanced Iowa Program, Taylor King.
Okay.
I need to check those off as I go.
Okay, good.
Advanced Iowa. Taylor, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm Drew Camp, and I'm going to just do a quick introduction here for Taylor. Taylor King's joining us from Advanced Iowa, from a University of Northern Iowa. And what Advanced Iowa is it's an entrepreneurial-oriented business assistance program that targets second-stage companies, those that have gone beyond the startup phase but are not yet at maturity. And we just want to thank her for taking the time to travel over from Cedar Falls to join us today, and also for taking the time to address the board. And with that, I'll turn it over to Taylor.
Good morning. I am Taylor King. I'm a program associate with Advanced Iowa. It's kind of interesting. So I went to Iowa State, and now I'm working at UNI. So I'm glad they're not playing Iowa State this year.
As are we.
I'm just here to give you kind of an overview about Advanced Iowa. And we're just a tool that you can use. You can refer businesses to us if you think that they'd be a good fit for our program. All economic development type organizations can do that. So, like Drew said, we are a statewide holistic consulting program targeted at mid-sized second-stage companies. We really work with expanding existing businesses rather than recruiting new companies. And we know this. We know that 34% of job creation comes from these second-stage mid-sized companies rather than large corporations or small business. We focus, obviously, on companies that are looking to grow, and that also fits some other basic criteria. 10 to 100 employees, 500,000 to 50 million in sales, and obviously that sell out of state or even internationally. This is kind of the sweet spot, the general size of these companies, not something necessarily that we put limits. They have 7 employees, you know, they have 101 employees. I mean, it's pretty flexible. A business working with Advanced Iowa will get some strategic coaching and consulting. We're really a third-party sounding board. Help them make decisions. Maybe like, you know, we're looking at expanding into this market. You know, what would that look like for us? Quarterly and financial reviews and benchmarking, if they choose, that is an option that we do provide. And obviously, the big thing is market intelligence, market research, competitor intelligence, prospect identification is a big one for a lot of these companies, and custom research. If they're looking for a specific thing we have a company that we're working with right now that they wanted to know the average size of a pothole. Did you know that you could find that information on the internet or someplace? You can't. So really, anything that they look for, I mean, we can definitely find it. If we can't find it or if it there's a small fee to it, we can get it usually for them. Otherwise, we really just point them in the right direction and really work with them to get what they need. These are all the clients that we've served so far with Advance Iowa. We've been up and running for about just a little bit over a year and a half. We've served about 50 clients all over the state, a couple here in Story County and one in Story City and one in Ames. And we can definitely send that to you or give you some more information on those if you'd like. Some examples, some products that we've worked with that are complete are a consumer food company. You might be familiar with Sturzing's potato chips in Burlington. We worked with them earlier last year. Obviously, they're not a new company. They've been around almost 100 years. That they were really kind of starting to see maybe sales plateau. They wish they were growing. They were, I mean, steady sales, but still kind of really wishing that they could amp it up. We kind of went through some online growth strategies with them, looked at third-party distribution through Amazon, and they were also thinking about doing a new product launch, kind of had some initial research and things done about launching popcorn. So we did some additional, you know, regulations about selling that, making that product in their facility, what would go into that, marketing, and obviously pricing, making sure that they were priced in a market for that. Another one is an ag manufacturer, equipment manufacturer in Northeast Iowa. Some basic prospect identification, lead scoring, looking to, you know, are there markets that they weren't touching that they should be in? They were also doing all the sales direct, so they're looking at building out their dealer network, really not having to deal with that part of the business. And some supplier research and joint venture consulting, looking for a partner in this. The owner was like, you know, my kids don't want to be part of this, but I don't really want to sell it off. Maybe I need to find a partner. So doing some research and helping them kind of decide how you would go about even doing that. This is one of our cool reports that we are able to provide. This report was for an asphalt, for a company that provided an equipment to asphalt plants. So they wanted information on all of the asphalt plants in the nation, and then they wanted them divided out by how old they were. So then they could really target market to a specific area, maybe their product. And it's just really graphical. I mean, really impactful on where you can see their target markets were obviously a lot in the Rust Belt and along there. So if you have any questions about the program, like I said, we're really a tool for economic development organizations. You know, and if we get a company, we kind of talking to them, we are familiar with all the other types of programs. So we're like, maybe they need to talk to the SBDC first. I mean, we can let you know that. Or we even have another program housed at the University of Northern Iowa called the Business Concierge. And they just do kind of one-off research for companies maybe that don't know what they want yet, if they're not really for a full-type engagement with Advanced Iowa, something long-term, and just kind of need a piece of the puzzle right now. We can definitely work with them too. I'll leave some of my cards and some information here for you guys. You can feel free to contact me or contact our director, Dan Binken. And I encourage you to check out our website with more case studies and testimonials from companies we've worked with. So
I have. It's a good website. And thank you for being here. My question is, first of all, I'm excited for you to have this tool in your toolkit now. Tell me what, other than talking you guys up as we're out in the community, what else can we do for you?
Really, if you just find someone you're like, you know, have a business in mind, send them our way. We are a state program. The governor, we are a line item in the governor's budget, so that's where our money comes from. Really just supporting us and sending clients our way if you feel that they'd be a good fit for our program. And like I said, even if we kind of get them and start digging through them a little bit and decide, we'll let you know, and we can pass them off to the local SBDC or even some of the other programs that we know around the state. If it's more of a job for Cirrus, we're going to refer them to the best person for them. So.
Outstanding. Thank you. It seems to me, though, that it's important for us to be really, really aware of it, but generally my first call when I'm in the community and questions like that come up is going to be to Drew, and so it seems to me that you guys' relationship is the important one in facilitating this in Story County. Is that accurate?
That is correct, yep. And I'm very familiar with this program and also some other programs they work with, that business and community services, with like the business concierge and such, things like that, some training on other programs I've gone through have put me in contact with a lot of those people she mentioned.
Well, I think it's a great bridge program I didn't know anything about before you guys
started
coming.
That's what we're here doing.
So I'm really appreciative that you were here.
Could you comment a little bit in terms of what do you see as your biggest challenge as you move forward?
Biggest challenge moving forward is learning. We're just kind of starting our second year of the program, kind of trying to figure out is awareness is the biggest challenge right now. There's so many other programs and kind of finding our sweet spot among those other programs right now, and working with companies and just helping businesses grow. Our challenge right now is finding out how we directly impact businesses. How do we benchmark those is our big thing. Obviously, we're helping them, but then they grew 10 employees last year. Was that a direct result of
right.
an engagement with us?
Right.
That's where we're struggling with at the moment. But obviously, I was hired back at the end of February, and that was kind of some of my role in this, is figuring, you know, tracking, making sure that we have accurate records of our companies and following up with them over time and see how.
So in addition to attending a meeting such as this, what other type of venues do you go to get the message out about what you do and,
yep.
and your availability?
We work with the PDI group. The Professional Developers of Iowa is a big one that we work with, and we'll be down there at their fall conference at Honey Creek this fall. Obviously, local chambers and is another big one that we work with, and just kind of some of their other avenues and through the University in Northern Iowa. We also are attending some of Cirrus's exporting conferences that they're having. They have one at Kirkwood here in a couple weeks that we'll be at to just kind of do that. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now public comment, portion number one. We'll give him a minute here to...
Lars, I may have come.
Yep, we've got...
Look. Good morning, Loris Olson. And it was just a question for you. Then who pays for your services, and how that would that relate to the Story County Board of Supervisors? Thank you.
Line item from the state is what she said just a minute ago.
So there's no fee to the
county? Nope.
Thank you.
Nope.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, and we do have a request from Randy Olson. You want to come up to the microphone here, Randy's got a question on an item on the consent agenda. It's actually item number 3. If you just want to have a seat and state your name for us, if you would.
Randy, how you doing today?
Good. How are you guys?
Thanks for being here.
I'm kind of a little bit out of my wheelhouse, but I'm a farmer. My name is Randy Olson. I got a public notice in the mail Friday about changing property to residential. I was been kind of watching this property for the last year. The neighbor that lived there was a bachelor fireman for many years. I don't want to take a lot of your time up, but there's a little history there. I own a confinement turkey farm that borders the property, and it kind of flabbergasted me as to, I heard some young people bought it, why anybody would want to buy a piece of property next to a confinement farm and build a green farm. I mean, but I thought, you know what, if that's their dream, why should I'll be neighborly just like I was with the firemen. But then we watched the house get torn down, and it was burned, and a cleanup kind of started in the spring, or I don't have the exact timeline, but that farm was owned by Thompson Hatchery. Both farms were owned by Thompson Hatchery back in the 70s. It was a confinement farm, as was where I'm at. They got into bankruptcy problems, and they sold off this partial to this fireman. He knew what he was getting into when he, became neighbors to the confinement, who was then owned by Lewis Rich the meat company. They moved out of town almost 20 years ago, and I bought the acreage to basically the farm, the confinement farm, to help the co-op off, who's now owned by the Iowa Turkey Growers Co-op. And I'm a member of that, and I've operated that farm with an employee and my son ever since. Getting back to the point, why would anybody, you know, want to build their dream home next to a confinement operation? Well, next thing I saw was a driveway go in and multiple signs going up as to realtor signs, and lo and behold, they're trying to, now I understand the whole story comes together, they're trying to subsidize it to make it residential. And the only reason I'm here is, you know, I'm assuming it's deemed agriculture now, and they want to change it to residential. And I live on a confinement farm. I know what the ramifications are of living on a livestock confinement farm. I have an employee that lives there who's been there 3 years. He knows what all is involved, but I just am concerned about turning it to residential of someone, now that I know that these people that bought it are probably not going to be the people living there. They're going to sell it. They're going to have a realtor work for them and sell it to somebody wanting their dream home and not knowing what they're getting into, because I'm sure everything's going to be downplayed as to the what's next to them. But on my farm, it will be the same there. I've got a nice house. I've got a deck. This time of the year, I can't use it. The flies are so bad that, you know, they're going to carry me off. And I would guess the fly population on my farm is 1,000 times what it is right here in Nevada. People probably don't realize it, but if you've been out there, you do. It's just part of living in a confinement area. I have to go out, when I go out and grill, I've got to slam doors and screen doors and get right back in the house. I've got a hot tub that I can't use unless it's in the middle of the night or in the middle of the winter. I've got a son who's now, you know, been through college. He had allergies. There's no way he could stay on the farm because these buildings, turkey confinement buildings, are free range. They're wide open in the middle of the summer. The dust blows in and out. We till these buildings. It's just a way of life. These turkeys have a very good life, but it's not always the best life for neighbors and for people living near the farm. So if they have allergies, they're not going to be around lot, you know, hogs or turkeys. And speaking of hogs, if this was a Iowa Select 10 building hog complex, would people be, you know, trying to change it to residential? I doubt it. I just doubt it. But they're trying to downplay, I think, that this is a turkey farm and that it's okay. But we have manure. You know, these buildings are open. It's dry manure. We till them twice a week. We keep it nice in there, but there's ammonia. That ammonia travels. This area was once a lake bottom. And if you look in the archives, the topographical maps, that whole section was a lake. If I stand in the middle of that farm and I look around, I'm the lowest point in the area. The snow blows in there 4 feet deep in the middle of the winter. Everything, the air movement, is not like it is if you're up on a hill. And I just want public record to know that these people that are going to be buying this, that's going to be residential.
It is residential now.
Right.
It's just they're talking about going from one residential lot to two residential lots.
Right.
So
I just want people to know that this is what, you know, what they're getting into. We have semis come in and out of that property with seed trucks daily. We have live haul trucks that load, come and get the turkeys in the middle of the night. We have feed lines that run off and on 24 hours a day. There is noise. And I just, all I'm here for is to say, you know, I'll be neighborly. I mean, I was neighborly with the firemen. We got along great, but I just, you know, this is not the city. This is the farm. And that's all I'm here for.
Well, and I appreciate that you're here trying to make sure that there is adequate notice to whoever might proceed with buying this property or properties of the realities of country living, especially country living next to a turkey farm.
I hate to see someone come out there and build a $400,000-$500,000 dream home thinking they're a half mile off of 69, that it's going to be easy to go work at Iowa State, and then all of a sudden go, well, you know, they didn't tell us this. They didn't tell us that, you know. And I'm going to be there going, saying, all I can say is I'm sorry. I've been here for 20 years. You know, this is our life. This is what we do.
Well, I think that so we're 20 to 25 minutes into the meeting. I think we need to talk with Charlie about making sure that this public record is readily available to the current owner of the property, as well as if there's a real estate agent involved. I mean, at the end of the day, all you can do is make sure as much as possible that people are aware. Appreciate you being here.
We've also got information that's on our website, the county's website, that tells people what to expect if they buy property in the unincorporated area, and it's just not the what your neighbors may or may not be doing. It's how often the snow plow comes by in the wintertime and what the added expenses are of living out in the country. So I appreciate you coming down here today. Yep. and you're being a good neighbor by doing this. So
absolutely, thank you.
All right. thank you
John, can I respond?
Sure, just come down and introduce yourself if you would.
And I'm the attorney representing the people that are subdividing it. People who are subdividing the property also own confinement facilities, so they're familiar with the situation. And I know Randy very well, a good friend of mine actually, wasn't aware of the conflict, quite frankly, or might not be here. But his facility is sitting next door, but it's clearly visible. Anyone purchasing either lot would be fully informed of it, or should be at least. I mean, it is very visible. Anyone purchasing the lot, as he stated, he's been there 20, 30 years, and the predecessors have also. And so anyone buying it would be subject to the existing conditions, and he really has no exposure from what I can perceive as a liability.
And I didn't hear him, Tom, no. I didn't hear him worry about the liability or anything else. Right. What I heard him saying is, and I appreciate this point of view, he doesn't want somebody moving in there thinking that they're coming someplace that's going to be smell-free and everything else. And all we can do
it's
is...
Visible.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure, super.
So I don't, you know, I understand his concerns, and regardless of liability or not, I'm sure he's concerned about that type of issue, but... You know, it's visible, it meets the code and the requirements of the county. The P&Z has reviewed it, so I think it's appropriate it's on the consent agenda.
I didn't hear us go down the road of considering, at least to this point, pulling it off consent.
Right.
I think what I assume that he was trying to do is somebody builds a house there, he doesn't want them knocking on his door saying, this is terrible, you need to get rid of this. He's been doing it for 20 years.
Right.
So,
right.
Thanks,
thank
Tom.
You,
John. Thank you.
And thank you for your comments as well.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Okay, next we have personnel actions, and I'm going to recuse myself from this one because there's a familiar name.
What about minutes? Week,
so.
Got to do minutes
all right.
First.
Man, I'm telling you, I'm going to walk out. And then come back in.
Let's do minutes. I move approval of the 8:26 minutes.
Second.
Motion is second. Any additions or corrections?
Yeah.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Those have been approved. Now, personnel actions without me.
Yep. You take off.
Yep. You don't have to.
I'll move consideration of personnel actions.
I will second it.
We have a motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Been approved.
And you can just
consent agenda. It looks like we need to add a utility permit 1510.
Move approval of consent agenda with the noted change.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Is there anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That's been approved. No public hearing items. Additional items. Discussion and consideration of reallocating $30,000 of the FY15 Story County funds from the Toledo Juvenile Home to Youth and Shelter Services for Rosedale Shelter Improvements. Deb Shildroth. Dr. George.
Good old Dr. George.
Morning.
Morning.
Right. George came and talked to the board about this a few weeks ago. Some funds that are currently, they're juvenile court funds, and they're currently budgeted for the Toledo Juvenile Home, which closed in this last February. And this point in time, there does not appear to be any plans in reopening that facility. And so George put together a proposal on some items related to safety and maintenance of the Rosedale shelter located in downtown Ames. There is a plan that's been approved by his board to open a new shelter in the near future and then reuse the Rosedale shelter for other purposes, whether it be transitional living or a halfway house. So whatever funds are put towards maintenance and safety issues in the Rosedale shelter, that shelter will be continued to be used in some form or fashion in the future. The amount of dollars being requested are $30,000, and the asset administrative team did talk to George about this and did not see any issue with it. I thought it was a good use of dollars, and George also talked to Tom Southard with Juvenile Court Services, and Tom was in support of the reallocation as well. So at this point, I'll turn it over to George if he has any further questions or comments about it.
I want to thank you for your consideration of this transfer of funds. It's $30,000 that's already in the county budget. It's under the juvenile court portion of the budget. The only addition I'd like to make by way of explaining why we need this extra help, it is strictly going to be used for repair, maintenance, and security. The new shelter that we have in mind, and we've needed to expand our facility and have a layout that is more conducive to the type of kid that we're working with now, would not be a reality to 2018. It's in our strategic plan to launch our fundraising campaign in 2017. So we need to have most of that raised at all through donations before we actually begin either building or converting another facility. But that Rosedale shelter was the first emergency use shelter in the state. At one time, there were 24 other shelters that pretty much used Rosedale as their model. We're now down to 14 shelters. Shelters have really been beaten up financially the last few years. 3 years ago, shelters lost $1 million in state funding, and then the following year, another $400,000. There were 5 emergency use shelters in central Iowa. We're now down to 2. YESS in Des Moines and YSS in Ames. That's it for central Iowa. The Polk County shelter closed, the Indianola shelter closed, and the Newton shelter closed. Our number of youth in placement has gone up, and this last year we were down in local referrals, but this year we went from 58 served FY 2013 to from 58 to 78, from 953 days to 1,453 days. So big increase in local referrals. Those are system-involved kids. And as you know, the county is mandated to pay a portion of the cost. We do not charge Story County under the mandate. Instead, we have this contract where we get a fixed amount no matter how many kids are there. This past year, the county would have ended up paying more if we had gone the mandate. But other years, like the year before last, it really saved us and helped us function in the black. But you also provide support through asset for non-system local kids. And that number went skyrocketed from 54 in FY 13 to 90 in FY 14, the year that just ended.
But George, it's not just, I mean, clearly the numbers are astronomical, but it's not just the numbers. It's also the severity of the issues that we're having with some of these kids, right?
The kids are tougher, and they're tougher on the facility. So this would be a big help to us for security. We want to have alarms on all the doors, the windows. We want to put in a video system. A lot of the other shelters already have that. A lot of them were built new. And we really think that this will help us do a better job.
Thank you again, George, for your additional information and so forth. And when this was brought to us, the likelihood of what the state is going to do with a shelter such as the Toledo home is if beyond FY15 is really up in the air yet. We don't know the outcome of the gubernatorial race and whether there will be a change in terms of the philosophy of that. But in terms of how we budget and dollars allocated through juvenile courts, having their support for what you're trying to do based on your need is appropriate. My question comes to mind is, as you prepare for the FY15-16 budget, working with juvenile court services and with the asset funders, looking at currently what your needs may be in other related services and not necessarily in this category, I think it's going to be a challenging one for us to move forward, because part of it has to do with prediction of what the need is going to be and the number of juveniles that we might end up having to serve as a result of what's happening statewide. And I know you've worked closely with the asset joint funders in the past, but I just continue to ask you to continue to be vigilant and keep us all aware of what challenges exist as we move forward beyond FY15.
Thank you, and we are in the process of putting our next asset proposal together. It's due at the end of September, and we are going to forecast and do the best we can to ask for additional help from asset.
Well, it seems to me to be a reasonable request, because I don't believe, and Deb, you can help me with this, I don't believe the intent from previous boards of supervisors or this board of supervisors was to cut some kind of huge savings deal monetarily. I think it was recognizing a need, recognizing the importance of Rosedale Shelter and the services YSS performs, and giving them some consistency in projected funding. I don't like hearing that YSS is losing money on this deal. I don't want Story County to be spending a whole lot extra, but I think it's completely reasonable that when we have an asset like this, we do what needs to be done to make it a viable entity. And so I would hope that you're able to utilize here these last couple of years, the numbers the last couple of years, to give some solid projections to asset for those fundings. My other question about this funding is, you're asking for $30,000 to upgrade this, but I see $57,000 in expenses. Where's that other $27,000 coming from?
We're working on donations. We have had a Fox Fund from Sylvia Fox. She donated a duplex to YSS. We sold it. And all of the proceeds from that have been used over the years to maintain the facility, and that fund has now dried up. And Sylvia passed away this last year, so she was a very generous donor to YSS and supporter. So we will be using our friends' funds and other donations to try to make up the difference.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I would move consideration of the reallocation of the $30,000 for FY15 from the Toledo Juvenile Home to Youth and Shelter Services for this improvement.
Got a motion and a second. Is there anything further?
I'd like to just add, Deb Childreth mentioned that Juvenile Court, Tom Southard, and his staff support this. They support it, I need to clarify, on the condition that the $30,000 be utilized for repair and maintenance and safety.
Well, I that's the expectation of the motion that I just seconded as well.
Right. And, and that's the way
I
the
just
proposal
want to clarify
worded.
It.
Right.
So,
exactly. Okay. Thank you.
With that, Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That's been approved.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We really support, really appreciate your support, and we will put those $30,000 to very good use locally.
Important.
Thank you. Thank you. Next is a discussion and consideration of revised asset policies and procedures. Deb Shildroth.
Handout are the policies that the administrative team reviewed. We try to do those on an annual basis. And primarily the changes circle around adding Central Iowa Community Services as a fifth funder to the process. And so that's what you see in the document before you, and that is just another step in bringing that entity into the asset process. And then there's also in the back of the document, and it is addendum. Addendum C, which are service codes. There's been changes in terms of services that are no longer offered in Story County, and so those were struck through, and then we did make some changes to units of service depending on the service and the funder, so or the service and the provider. So those are just some real basic changes. Content-wise, everything else remains the same. The asset board recommended approval of this at their meeting in August, and so now the next task is to bring this to each funder for final approval.
And when does Central Iowa get to weigh in on it? Because they're not a funder yet until this is approved, right?
Yeah, they signed the 2018 agreement at their August meeting. And now that 2018 agreement is, and you guys have approved it and signed it as well. It's now being cycled then through the City of Ames, United Way, and DHS and GSB.
Okay, and so my question was, Wayne, will your group deal with now the amendments to the policies and procedures as well?
I think so. Yeah, we'll have to.
The plan is just to have that on the agenda for the meeting on September 15th.
Okay.
Yeah, my question comes back to, like, the items that were striked under Addendum C that are no longer available. Are they being utilized someplace else within the region, or is this something that the number of clients that would use that service now is such that it wasn't productive to continue? What can you tell us about the future of some of those services that were listed?
Those services that were struck through are they're no longer available in Story County, and that was based on the agency's decision. So, for example, under Mainstream Living, the Work Activity Center, that was the Story County Developmental Center, they closed that several years ago, which was a very good move on their part, because that is a particular service that Medicaid and the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare frown upon, because it's very much a congregate work setting and doesn't get clients integrated into other kinds of employment settings. So that's been closed for quite some time. The other one, the residential care for individuals with mental retardation, that's actually a licensure service, and Mainstream used to have their sites licensed as residential care for mentally retarded. They dropped that quite some time ago when the Medicaid program, the waiver program, became available for individuals. So, again, it's just some cleanup.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay.
I'd move approval of the revised asset policies and procedures.
Second.
The motion and a second. Is there anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Those have been approved. Thanks, Deb.
Thanks, Deb.
Discussion and consideration of transition support plan for Story County Community Life. Alyssa Wignall.
Good morning.
Morning.
Part of the transition that we're working on concerning our community life program, part of the consultants recommended us putting together a transition support plan for the employees over in that are employed by the community life program. So what we have is we have a draft of the plan, and it's broken out into different sections. I'm just going to kind of just give a very broad overview of all of it, and then if you have any questions. What I did, or what we put together, I shouldn't say I did it all. I did have help. What we did is we sent out a survey to the employees over there. We had 38 responses, so we could kind of understand what they're looking for, what kind of support plans they would like provided to them. The main one that I did see, the first one is IPERS. Since our retirement is IPERS, we would like to bring somebody on site to meet with them. I've been working with IPERS on this. It seems that it's going to be more beneficial to our employees to have a couple benefit consultants come up to provide individual meetings with the employees instead of a group presentation. That way our employees can ask specific questions about their retirement, different options that they have. So I'm still working with Jeff down at IPERS to see if that is a possibility and when they can do that. I have had some requests from employees to get that done in October. So I'm working to see if we can have somebody come up as early as the first week of October. And another part is having an unemployment specialist come up. And I've been playing phone tag with Annette from Iowa Workforce on this. They can come up and do a generalized meeting, and then they could come up closer to the transition date and assist our employees with any forms, any questions that they have, anything like that. Health insurance exchange. It's pretty tentative at this point. We're not sure we're able to have someone come on site. This would be for employees that are enrolled in our health insurance, group health insurance, and then they would get assistance to help them find insurance through the marketplace. Skill building workshops. I had quite a few employees interested in this. The main workshop they're interested in would be reemployment services, resume writing, cover letter writing, job searching, interviewing skills, stuff like that. Iowa Workforce Development does offer these. I did talk with Marlis from Iowa Workforce. They would be able to have these on site if we would have 8 employees interested. So they would be able to bring someone in to put on this workshop as long as we would have 8 employees or more sign up for that, which would be beneficial for employees. They wouldn't have to drive to Des Moines to go to these workshops. We do have an EAP available currently. We will just give that information out again to all the employees as part of this plan. The last portion of it would be a retention bonus plan. We do want to make sure we can provide the services to our clients. So part of this transition support plan would include a retention bonus plan for our employees. There isn't anything outlined in this plan because quite a few of our employees within that department are covered by a collective bargaining agreement, which would we would have to discuss that with the union.
When is that going to happen?
The third week in September, we have an initial meeting with the representative from there.
Well, I'd just like to say that, early on when you begin to hold the meetings or reach out to the employees, I understand that our chair, Paul Toot, worked with you guys and worked with the staff and also Ron, and I've visited with Ron on a couple of occasions. He's in the audience today as our director, is well aware of the effort that we have tried to put forth to support staff during this transition phase, and I feel very comfortable that what we have in place will help address some of the questions that they may have. Now, in your very first question, my comment comes back to whether IPERS will actually bring someone on site. Mm-hmm. If they don't do this, because I know I've gone down myself there, would we hopefully be able to make arrangements that we could get staff down there where it would not be at their expense if need be. You know, we have the vans and several others, whether we could have someone set up several meetings if they're unable to do so. I would hope that we would have that flexibility in place to assure them that they could get down and meet individually if they needed to be. But I certainly would agree that an individual meeting is much better than the group presentations, because each individual has their own particular situation that they need to address. So, but
I think that's kind of the plan, is for them to send a couple of
up. We're gonna. The only difficult portion of this is you don't know how long the individual meetings are going to take.
Right.
It could take somebody 20 minutes, and right. The next person it could take an hour and a half. So, you know, trying to schedule those is going to be a little challenging. But they can sure send up a couple, and they might have to do it a couple days, different days, because if we have 30, 40 individuals sign up for these meetings, I'm hoping that IPERS will be able to facilitate that on site.
And I realize you say from the survey we've gotten some response from 38 and so forth. But once we engage in further discussions regarding this, hopefully there will be avenues available so that other staff that might have some questions will be able to come to us and have us address that may not necessarily be just these items that we've listed here. Is that
what other type of items? This is the actual plan that will be available to the employees.
Guess,
if they have any
asking,
questions,
is there anything else that
if they have
could
any questions
up?
Concerning benefits or how anything that's going to work, they can contact me directly.
Okay.
At any point from now until whenever the transition happens.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I think this is completely appropriate. I mean, we're 10 months from yesterday away from seeing this full transition having occurred, and I think offering these kind of resources way ahead of the game to our employees is completely appropriate. I appreciate the three of you. Ron, I appreciate you working on this. Paul, I really appreciate you working on this. I think it's a great document in terms of the 5 points that you have come up with for resources to our current employees. I am highly interested in that last non-point that we still have to have conversations with the bargaining unit before we can get to, because to me that goes, this is resources to our employees, that is the true transition of services and how we get there, and I think it's vital that we get to the end of that one as well. So with that, I'm going to move approval of the transition support plan as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve this support plan as presented. Is there anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That's been approved.
Good work.
Next, we have discussion and direction to staff to compile amendments to the urban renewal plan.
Leanne, how you doing today? I'm good.
Thank you.
Oh, no, we gotta have the leader here when we get going on this.
Well, as of last Tuesday, you've heard from all the applicants for the 2014 Urban Renewal Area projects. What was put on your agenda is the current Urban Renewal Plan as adopted last year. If the board recalls, the approach you took last year was to add all the applications that were received, and then later on in fall of 2013 to actually pick those projects you wish to fund. So the adopted urban renewal plan does include projects that were not funded last year. So some direction to staff is being sought as to whether or not you wish to remove those from the plan. So going back to the projects from last year, and then the next step forward, what projects from this year you want to add, or do you want to keep the same approach as you did last year, incorporate them all into the plan, and then a year from now, those not funded would be removed. And then building on that, the discussion on what projects you do wish to possibly fund. So what I've done is, if you have your copy of Urban Renewal Plan, I can tell you the areas that staff would recommend striking initially to remove, again, those projects from last year. On page 2, it would be removing numbers 5 and 7. That is the Colo and the Huxley projects that were not ultimately funded. And then the very bottom of page 2, it references the map and Exhibit B. Exhibit B will need to be modified as well.
Those changes.
Those two. And then, of course, to add anything you'd want to add. So if you had any new projects that you wanted to add, you would want to start numbering on that page 2, and staff would renumber. And then on page 3, again, under additional projects, item number 5, the second and the fourth bullet points would need to be stricken. For 3-day weekend, you forget grammar. And then on page 5, which is the financial information, once it is determined the projects that are going to be funded, this section is amended. And then the last change would be exhibit 7, or page 7, and I've already said this, amending exhibit B.
No additional wind turbines to put on this year. We put them all on last year, and then we've got some in the pipeline, but they're not ready yet.
Right.
Okay. I think I agree with the process that you've laid out, where we go back and we start by correcting or by modifying this to what we actually did last year. And then I would suggest we follow the same process that we followed last year, which would be then to turn around and add everything, the amended version of everything that's been requested of us, so that we can, over the next month, go through the process of figuring out exactly what, if, we're going to fund at what level. That would be my suggestion to the board.
Well, we had that process that we used last year, and that was going to be one of my initial questions as I was thinking through how we proceed to evaluate each of the requests that was currently there. And I think that having that consistency helps us a lot. I guess I'm in support of that suggestion. My question really is more for information, trying to make sure that I understand. Back when we go back to the additional projects, and you said the recommendations under items 2 and 4 that we removed or suggested that we strike. Again, these were had a lot to do with the type of projects being offered, suggested at that time, and the question as to whether or not they fit what our intent was. What was the, if you could just maybe comment a little bit regarding, you know, the rationale there that we used.
Well, through the board's discussions last year, ultimately, as you discussed the applicability of each project and decided the amounts or to ultimately fund those specific two specific projects, that was the road improvements in the city of Colo and the trail improvements for the city of Huxley, the board found that those do not fit into the four types of projects that you had at that point in time decided to fund in last year. But the process is such that they were incorporated into the plan with the direction that later on we'll remove them.
Well, and we didn't determine, so we had drafted this plan about this point, a little later than this, but about this point last year, and then we didn't make the final determination until it was about mid-October, wasn't it,
yeah,
that we made the
right,
final determination. Right. And I'm expecting a similar kind of timeline this year in terms of when a – I mean, you're pushing for a little sooner than that, right?
A little
sooner.
But
a similar kind of timeline for the final decisions to be made this year.
Right.
About a month ahead of schedule from last year, aren't we?
And we need to, depending on the level of projects and the amount of projects that are funded and the type of financing mechanism that's needed, last year was just too tight of a time frame, and so we need to build in that month flexibility if needed.
And maybe just after our last meeting when we heard all the projects brought forth, I believe there was a request by the Slater to get back to us, to go back and look at some of their project and maybe communicate back at a later time possible revisions or restructuring. Have you heard anything from them yet? We're still anticipating that more than likely will be part of the process as we move forward then.
I believe so. I think based on the direction given today, staff would complete the necessary amendments or highlight the necessary amendments to the plan, put that for action next Tuesday on your agenda that's adopted by resolution, and then begin the process if we need to actually amend the ordinance, which we'll have to delve into that, begin that process as well. And then next Tuesday and probably the next subsequent Tuesday, so three Tuesdays in a row, you three have an opportunity to have a discussion exactly then what projects or portions thereof you wish to fund. I would hope that in that time frame, Slater will be communicating additional information, as well as any of the other applicants, if they have more to add.
Okay. So just to make sure that, again, Supervisor Sanders' request then was to include all of the proposals that have been brought for us so that they can be part of the consideration process as we move forward.
With the amended funds that were requested during the meeting.
Yeah, I mean, just so we're clear, take the plan, and instead of having it exactly what we approved, amend it to what we actually did last year,
right?
And then add to it every request in their amended form, because there were some dollars that were changed as the proposals were made in their amended forms, but build those then into the plan for that draft plan that then we move ahead, as Leanne suggests, and start to really identify what we're going to do this year.
Okay. Thank you.
So I would – I don't know if it's a motion. I'll do it in a form of motion. I move that we direct staff to make those changes.
Second.
Got a motion and a second to amend the plan as outlined by Leanne Harder. Is there anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. There's your direction.
Okay. Thank you, Leanne.
Thanks, Leanne.
Next, we have agency reports. Central Iowa Tourism. No, we're going to move Julie off today. She's unavailable.
Okay.
That takes us down to departmental reports. Facilities Management Department report. Cal Pearson.
Cal?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Okay, start with the rain.
We all had a nice long weekend. I'll begin with my numbers, as I usually do, of completed work orders and on-call. Administration building, we had 75 work orders and 2 on-calls. CLP group home, 85 work orders, 15 on-calls. Human Service Center, 58 work orders, 3 on-calls. Justice Center, 89 work orders, 11 on-calls. Other, miscellaneous, 5 work orders, 0 on-calls. A total of 312 work orders and 31 on-calls. We're about on track for last month. I was looking back, so it's about normal there. It brings me great pleasure to announce that we had 0 snow days this last quarter, so that's nice to know that we aren't doing any of that this time of year. Projects that we've had going through this quarter was the CLP re-roofing project, which is basically completed. We're waiting for documentation and warranty information, and we will release the retainage check, and that will
get that part fixed over the entryway.
The coping was replaced with, as it was called out in the spec, looks good. So, yes, everything's on track there. It looks nice, and then we haven't had any leaks since we put the new roof on, which is a good thing.
Had plenty of rain to test it, too, so.
Yeah. We finished up the office for Leanne down the hall for her new office area in this building, so that's done. We've done several parking lot repairs, if you may have noticed, this summer in HSC here at the admin, and we're just completing one out at the Justice Center this last weekend, finished up. That's kind of an ongoing thing with keeping on top of those parking lots. We had an issue at the kitchen with the duct work that came up, and after investigating and looking back in the spec book, we found out that the subcontractor did not install the duct work as it was spec'd from the original building, and with Jessica's help from the county attorney's office, so we contacted the subcontractor, and he's in the process of replacing that ductwork and doing it as it was called out in the spec. So we're still we're getting closer with the tower project. I think I'll be coming next week, moving forward with
that. Was supposed to be a simple little project, Cal.
It's been a very challenging project, but we are moving forward with it, and I think we're going to see daylight soon. Also, we're still working on a review of some preliminary prints for the Justice Center infill project, so that's keeping us busy. Other than that, we're busy with our normal duties of mowing, trimming, adding fill dirt as needed in the grounds, and normal everyday tasks. If you have any questions for me.
Just the last week, we found that the rain had caused a little bit of leakage in somewhere. Have you been able to identify that and figured out what steps maybe need to take place? There was a little water found here in the admin area, and I think it was human service building as
yes.
well.
What happened at the Human Service Center was kind of interesting because all the leaks showed up on the lower level. And what happened was we had a cloud burst of torrential downpour, and our gutter system from the roof drains. That's where our condensate lines for our heat pumps drain into.
Backed up enough.
It backed up enough that it overflowed the air gap on the heat pumps in the lower level, so we got some water coming back in. We're looking into some things we might do. I think we can just add an extension on the air gaps, but that's one of those things that it isn't a normal leak. Here it was the same way as what we found out so far, is we had so much water come down so fast, it comes up on the building to where the rubber roof comes up on the wall, and it looks like we've found some spots where the water has found a way in there. So
that is that just entail going around and sealing where the rubber meets the wall?
There is a seal there, but sometimes it weathers, and we had it narrowed down, it sounds like, from what the guys say of where this one came in here. But this is abnormal conditions of these rains like this when it comes up like that, and it's just something I guess we're going to have to deal with on occasion. So,
all right, thank you.
Make sure you let your staff know that you guys are doing a really tremendous job. I mean, I've said this before. We're sitting in a 50-year-old building, which is kind of hard to believe, but and I've seen Rick Carter out. I mean, he's working his hind end off. He's, we've moved the founding marker that was out here in the parking lot that, a lot of people didn't even know what it was, but it's actually the spot of the first house that was built
in Nevada, and you guys have moved that, and he's keeping the grounds looking good, and you guys are doing a tremendous job of keeping up on everything. I know it's can be a daunting task sometimes, but you guys
appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, Paul, I want to echo that. First of all, I think you're 100% right. We have great staff, but I want to single out the guy sitting in front of us right now. Cal is a phenomenal facility director, and it is really, really nice to not have to worry about things getting done the right way in a timely fashion. And so, Cal, we're really appreciative of the work you do. And I know it extends all the way through your staff, but I can't believe this building's 50 years old. I mean, somebody walk around it, you can't tell that this is 50 years old.
Well, that's part of the reason we're hung up a little bit on our tower, because it's had to come in and yes, do some sort of a study to make sure.
I don't know. Some kind of a state-mandated study of a building that's 50 years old. So, yeah. Well, I appreciate the comments. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks, Cal.
All right. Next, certainly not least, everybody's favorite, Joe Quaker. Come on down, Joe. Tell us what you've been doing this summer.
Talking about not worrying.
No visual aids today.
Joe, if things aren't growing this year, they're never going to grow, are
they? They are growing well. Hello, everybody. Joe Quaker, natural resource biologist for Story County, the department head for the Integrated Roadside Vegetation Management Program, safety chair for Story County, county's weed commissioner. All-around nice guy and a 25-year veteran of promoting clean air, water, open space, and quality of life for those that live in Story County and pass through it.
And head of PR for
Joe Quaker. I had a practice act, so I'm giving a program. Let's see here. So this is kind of a quarterly update with some year-end numbers, but not all the year-end numbers that we have, or else we'd be here forever. But thank you. One of the things we started doing, that's pretty hard to see because we took a picture of it and scanned it in. We'd like to get a big map printed out, but that takes a little bit of work. We haven't gotten that far. That's normally a winter project, you know, to get everything going. But what we've done with our GPS and ARC mapping, as we've pretty much got everything that we do, you know, digitized, I guess. So we can give you guys a good map. When we're in the field, however, if you go in our office, we still do it the old way where we have a 911 map laid out on a big table, and when the guys come in doing a project, they just make a mark. But then we go back and we can download that information and get an accurate map. So everybody wants to know about the weeds and brush, so I put this in here, keeping in mind that One of the goals of the roadside program or the integrated roadside vegetation management is to use herbicide wisely. That's our main goal, okay? It's one of the reasons we're here. Back in the day, they'd hire Laverty to go out with the big tank trucks. Paul, maybe you remember that, and they would blanket spray the county or half the county. The state of Iowa got away with that with the Clean Air Water Act in the 80s, and you know, we just like to spot spray and do the best we can. All the staff is certified and trained, so part of our deal is to keep the smaller brush out of the county right away for many reasons: visibility, safety issues, integrity to the road itself if you get a lot of brush in there. But we primarily focus on the north and the west sides of the road, clearing that, and the south and east due to wind drifting, mainly from the north and west. We do leave a few shrubs here and there, low-growing shrubs. We're not totally denuding the whole county of brush and trees, but just making it, a place we can travel in. As far as noxious weeds, 273 is a lot of miles. Normally we're at 200 for last year. And, you know, when you see FY15, we're only a few months into it, okay? So most of that's going to happen next June. So we'll catch up to those numbers in June. So we hit the weed and brush spraying pretty hard this year.
What's a normal brush? 136 miles. What's normal for that?
Good question. Well, I'm going to go on further. Normally, we contract out 2 to 3 townships. I'm going to say about 100.
About 100, okay. Thanks.
But we hit it hard last year. Remember, we didn't get our contractor hired? So we hit it pretty hard. And that, you know, getting 136 miles is a lot of work.
Oh, and you've already done 70 this
yeah.
year. So
yep.
clearly you guys have been hitting it hard in July.
So Japanese knotweed, I wanted to throw this one in here. We contracted out with the city of Ames, and we would do this for any other municipality. A lot of the cities in Story County, you know, they don't have people certified to spray like we are. This takes a special certification to spray next to aquatics. This is right. This is a car park bridge over the Skunk River. And that's Japanese knotweed, which is a pretty crappy plant, really. It's on the number one of the number one lists for the USDA as far as taking over things. It really can get started along trails, in the woodlands, along water areas. It reproduces, you know, it's in many different ways, hard to get rid of. So we went ahead and sprayed it in Emma McCarthy Park and at Carr Park and a couple other spots I don't know about. Tyler knew where they were. I didn't ask him. Evidently down on 610th down by Highway 210. But we're keeping track of this one. One of the many nasty ones coming in. I think Heather just threw this up here as far as our letters for the weed, you know, part of being the weed commissioner, we do get calls. Hey, this is, you know, Fred Flintstone. My neighbor has some musk thistles. So what we try to do is send them out a letter, make sure it's registered so we have a timeline on when they have to control it. This is by the weed law, okay? Some counties send out violation, you know, actually charge them money, but Story County, we really don't do that. We find that most of our producers, all of them actually, want to take care of that. It's just a matter of logistics and when they can get in. It was kind of wet, and you know, record wet, I think June or May anyway. And we follow up with this. Basically, controlling the plant when everyone sees it's too late. So my job is to work with these producers, landowners in October and again early in the spring so they can control the plant before it gets out of hand. I talked to our contract sprayer today, this morning, about 8:15. We do have a person out of Duncombe, Iowa, I think. Well, anyway, that doesn't really matter. We're up by Waterloo. Dysart, I can't remember. No, that's not up there. But he's down here in a blue Ford pickup, King Cab Diesel, by himself. And we contracted out with him to go ahead and cover Grant and Nevada Township. And he is done with Nevada and moving to Grant. He's having a hard time because of the wind and the weather. And what I want to show you here is our bid proposals for these brush contractors are pretty specific on what they use. We tell them what herbicides we want them to use, what rate. We give them, we let them know we don't want them spraying up to a certain amount of wind. And what size of trees, anything over 10 feet, you're spraying too high. We don't want anybody spraying in front of residential area or houses. You know, if you live out in the country, you may mow in front of your house. But we will let them spray across the road in the ditch across from their house, but not in front, the ditch in front of their house. And so
ran into that on where it's over by Stagecoach, didn't we, last year?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a question. You know, obviously you see a spray truck coming. You know, people are concerned, and they should be. So we try to keep them away from those areas. And obviously we have the special crops list that is on IDOL's website, the Iowa Department of Ag. Anybody who has special crops, grapes, certified growers of any kind, organic, that are registered on that line, on that site, we notify and ask them where they're at, so we stay way, avoid those areas. We'll mark them off on the map, and we don't come close to those. But those landowners then are asked to do their own maintenance. If they don't want us to spray there, then they're going to have to work it out. Just a few other things. This is your detour on North Dakota. The first gravel road. Well, you're looking into Ames. Can you guys figure out where that's at a little bit maybe? But that's the detour. Just simple things like cutting that bush down for visibility. We sent the crew out for many windier, wetter days, and they would do this and cut and chip it up. 265th Bridge. You know, you build a bridge and the brush comes up over it. You really can't spray there because it's next to the river. And you'll see in a lot of counties, actually, you know, this is just a good spot for the trees to grow up. You want to clear them out of there. A lot of mosquitoes on that day and a little bit of poison ivy under these bridges. So, we didn't find a troll, though. No trolls this time.
New bridge.
Yep.
They haven't had time.
I think they got a picture of the fat guy here underneath the, I don't know, boom mower. We had a hydraulic line. A lot of maintenance.
You taking a nap there?
I no, but it's a perfect spot to. I mean, people think you're working, but you know, we do a lot of maintenance out there at that building, keeping things up. What we can't, we hire out. But mainly, the best thing for us is to get to know our equipment so we can fix it quickly, unless it's too big of a job. A lot of questions on this. If you've been out there, we have a lot of seed drills, about 20 of them. Everyone's asking, you know, Quaker, what are you doing? Selling these on, you know, on the side. But we did work with the DOT and through the Living Roadway Trust Fund coordinator, Troy Seifert. These drills are pretty much all the same, the mid-90s versions. They haven't changed much. There were 20 of them purchased and went out to all the different districts in the state. When they used to do in-house prairie planting in the interstate system, they quit doing that, and all these drills were stored for 20 years. And so with that, they decided to get them together in one spot. They hired a person, Lynn Reese, by the way, is his name, out of Hamilton County. He's an old roadside manager, or Hardin County, I mean. And he comes over a couple days a week, and he's working on these. And they're going to put them back out to the county system, anybody who needs a drill. And by the way, since they're using our grass to park them on, Story County gets a pick of the litter. So I'll be getting one of these drills. And they're about $15,000 new. Iced tea seed, we mixed up a big batch in the floor of the shop. That's about $40,000 worth, about $500 an acre. So we're mixing it all up, got the dust mass on. Moving on, this is a picture someone took with a cell phone on planting the interior of Dakin's Lake. That's before the water came up. Wayne, right? Trying to get something to green up. And as you know, we're not worried about planting so much. We're worrying about mowing because it's growing.
Good.
we're hydro seeding out there. Last year we did about 16 acres worth, you know, with the hydro. We did about 22 acres total in roadside plantings, which is about 20 acres short of our average. But all the brushwork we did and whatnot and the spraying, I think you're going to take away with one and do with the other. So little hydro seeding. By the way, we did get that grant for the hydro seeder. And when we get the paperwork in, we'll get it ordered.
That's a little different than the hydro seeder you've been using, isn't it?
That is the hydro seeder I've been using.
Is it just a seeder unit?
Yes. We still get Reno. Reno doesn't leave us, the truck.
That's who I was talking about.
Yeah, Reno, 318,000 miles. I guess it's just getting broke in.
Oh, we hope so.
It runs great. It's a little slow, but it runs fine. I did buy a brand new Model 72 Alice Chamber combine. I know it's not the self-propelled thing that we wanted, but this came out of a museum the other day. We threw a little money at it. The county did. I got Pheasants Forever to chip in $500. This was $1,000 total. It ought to help us out. That makes number three, plus one in the back for parts. So we could talk about harvest seed forever. It's coming up in about 3 weeks. We got a lot of seed to get for our roadsides and for Mike's Park up there and for some of the other properties. So we'll be online to harvest a bunch of seed.
Well, and all said and done, it saves us a lot of money.
Doing that. Well, you're talking 40 acres at, that was 20,000. So, you know, a few hours of combining seed, it pays off. Again, I hit the GPS stuff. We're mapping everything. A lot of mowing with the boom mower. Other mowings. I guess I'll let you know that not only do we plant roadsides, but obviously we helped Nevada Kwanians Park. We did a little work there. We're mowing that for those guys so it grows well. The Askew Bridge mitigation site, the seeding failed. We did, the inspector came last year. We've had a, you know, hard, that's a hard deal to grow there. It floods out or it was too dry. So this year we bought, I bought half the batch of seed and I planted it three different times, just kind of split it in thirds, and it's looking really good. And we kept it mowed while it was dry, and it should be fine. The Maxwell South Gateway Prairie, that's Highway 210. As you go around the corner, that was a project we're helping Maxwell on. That's seeded, and we mowed a few times. I do believe Rod Maxwell also mowed it, the farmer down there, to help us out. And then there's an Iowa State prairie planting. Not sure where this is at. Tyler's working on this one to some research, but that's contracted out. We did that for to help out for money. Just we charged him for it. It's not a freebie. Some animals out there. The badger is the coolest one. Look at that little guy. I think I'd have been a badger if I was a roadside mascot. But
that's what I think of when I look at you.
Yep, the badger. Little badger going on. We do look alike. Tyler put this together this morning, bless his heart, just to let you guys to know what's going on. All these numbers might just run in but and look the same. We got a lot of complete. We almost hit our 30 grand last year. We've been working hard. We have not done much up until last week. We started full out up in Warren 11. Warren 11 right here. This is north of E18. The Prairie Rail Trail head there, and then you go up a mile north. You can see all those trees. That's where they're at today. There's $9,000 in that one, and that's just a start of it. The rest, we're going to hit Grant 5 again. We're going to burn up a lot of our brush piles and things like that. So the one limiting factor on this drainage ditch work is staff, because a lot of the guys' kids go back to school
about the time we're ready to get started.
And it's hard to get someone in a few hours a week to transition from book work to running a chainsaw for 8 hours. And it's been a challenge. This week we have help. Next week we'll see. We're just borrowing from everybody. And I want the board to know that I made a call today to the NRCS office, and continuous sign-up for CRP is started a couple weeks ago, which means our filter strips that we want to get going, they're eligible to do that. So I'm meeting with the NRCS Thursday at 2 o'clock. We're going to try to get some landowners, a list of landowners and some letters out to those that are eligible for some filter strips along these open ditches, and that way we can protect those ditches and get some access lanes for us to work in there. So I need a glass of water. I talked a lot. Any questions, you guys?
How's the ditch looking up there south and west of Story City?
Weedy. I went by there the other day, and it's so wet in there. But there's not a noxious weed in it. It's just a low prairie pothole area along the main traveled road that gets a lot of weed seed.
Benko able to get the trees out?
Are you talking the road ditch or the?
No, I mean the drainage ditch.
Oh, the drainage ditch. We're done up to that. Yeah, we had the contractor go up. I signed off on that. The landowner up there, they took all care of all the brush piles from Highway 69 going up those landowners all work together. Okay. So there are some trees left standing.
But most of those were at the landowner's request, weren't they?
Yeah. I mean, our goal wasn't to get them all down, so there is going to be some dissension, I think. That answer your question?
Betcha. Thank you. Finco doing a good job? Is Finco doing a good job?
Finco, yes. It's just good question. I thought about that, honestly, and being a new program and not for us not having a very set standard to ask the contractor to do that, I think he did great. And he stopped at 140th in October. We're going to talk. We have a half a mile left to do. And his goal, Scott Wall, we have the email, is to be done by December 30th, no later.
Good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Joe, nice job.
On top of thing. Good job. Very good job.
Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne.
Had a very short meeting with Deb last week just to kind of sign contracts for the Central Iowa Regional Committee, and visited with Ron briefly, and completed that this morning where I finalized his evaluation and so forth. So that's all taken care of. So other than that, that's about it.
Pass. I'll pass also. Public forum number two, comments from the public. On items not on the agenda, the board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. I don't see anybody moving towards the mic. We'll go to announcements from the supervisors. Wayne.
Well, I'm just happy to say that we've added a new addition to the family. Last Saturday morning, Saturday morning, about 12:05, my third great-grandson was born in North Carolina. And so at some time here by the end of the year or first of next year, I hope that I can get out there and see him in person and be able to do the normal rock and roll and all that good stuff.
That's
so
outstanding.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Rick, anything?
Nope.
I'll pass also. Closed session. Jessica Reynolds.
Good morning to the
yes.
board.
Morning.
Pursuant to Iowa Code Section 21.5, Sub 1, Sub C, the Story County Attorney's Office respectfully requests that the board enter into a closed session to discuss strategy with counsel in matters that are presently in litigation or where litigation is imminent, where its disclosure would likely prejudice or disadvantage the position of the governmental body in said litigation.
Okay. I would move that we accept the Assistant County Attorney's recommendation and move into closed session. Per Iowa Code.
Second. We have a motion and a second to go to closed session. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. We'll go to closed session in about 5 minutes in the board's conference room.
Thank you.
Okay. We're back in open session, and I will turn again to Jessica Reynolds, Assistant County Attorney.
Thank you. Pursuant to Iowa Code Section 21.5, Sub 1, Sub C, the Story County Attorney's Office respectfully requests that the Story County Board of Supervisors convene a closed session to discuss strategy with counsel in matters that are presently in litigation or where litigation is imminent, where its disclosure would be likely to prejudice or disadvantage the position of the governmental body in said litigation.
I move another closed session.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to go into closed session. Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. We'll reconvene in the conference room. Come on, let's. Okay, it's 12:08, and we're back in open session, and I'll turn to Jessica Reynolds.
Thank you. On behalf of the Story County Attorney's Office, the County Attorney's Office is looking for authorization for ICAP to settle with Tina McLean for an amount of $30,000 total, with $10,000 being the county's deductible.
I move approval of that recommendation.
Second.
A motion and a second of the County Attorney's approval. Is there anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot, aye, that's been approved.
I move adjournment.
Second.
Motion is second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye, we're adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Very much.